Crystal Tower Information Whiskey, 21530, Zulu, wind 060 at 5.
076 Mike Juliet, this is departure radar contact.
SRS weather information from Minnesota available on flight service frequency.
You've dialed in the Flying Midwest podcast, connecting aviators from across America's heartland. Sharing news, information, and events from around the region. Sit back, relax, and join our crew for some hangar talk as we discuss a wide variety of regional aviation topics.
Archer 71143, flying flag, runway 280 left, quick takeoff, left handoff.
And now, from our home at the Anoka County Blaine Airport, our checklist is complete and we're ready for departure for another episode of the Flying Midwest Podcast.
What is going on, everyone? Jim here with the Flying Midwest Podcast. So happy you're able to join us. On this special bonus episode, we bring you part two of our interview with airshow performer Kyle Franklin. We'll talk with him about his routines, some of their origins, as well as what he finds most rewarding about his airshow career. And just like always, we'll bring a little friendly hangar talk along the way. So strap in and let's take off into this episode of the Flying Midwest Podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Flying Midwest Podcast. I'm Maddie, and I'm here with my co-host, Jim. Say hi, Jim.
Hi, Jim. That was so cheesy. Not
it
you,
was
me.
So cheesy.
That's such a dad joke.
No, I was hoping you would say that.
Hi, hungry. I'm dad.
I'm hungry. I'm dad, yeah. Trevor's not here.
Yeah,
we're normally... I'm sure you are all aware.
Well, they wouldn't be aware because they just started listening.
That's true.
But they're aware now because you just said it. No Trevor for the introduction this time. Trevor is busy working on some studying. He's in the final stages of mission qualification for his flight engineer school. So he's focusing on his studies as we record the intro and outro of this episode. But he did join us for the interview with Kyle Franklin, which is the subject of this episode.
We're essentially trading places.
We kind of are. It's going to be a flip-flop of hosts.
Yeah, the only constant here is Jim.
Yeah, here I am. So this is a bonus episode where we're going to feature part two of our interview with Kyle Franklin. We had so much good content with him. We had to cut it in two. So the last episode was more the family history, how he got into the airshow business. This episode will focus more on his routines, how he develops them, and some of the things he finds rewarding about being in the airshow business.
I can't wait to listen to it.
Are you going to listen to this one, though?
Yeah, because I'm not in it.
Well, you're in the intro. Just skip the intro right to the interview.
Yeah, I'll skip the intro.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. Well, I'll listen to the whole thing on your behalf. So before we dive into the interview itself, we've had a lot of stuff going on in the last week or so since we last published. Typically, we record and we will publish every 2 weeks. But with the amount of content we have stacking up, we are going to publish 3 weeks in a row, including this bonus episode that we'll push out on the 18th, which is a Sunday. Should we talk about some of the things we've had going on in the last week or so, Maddie?
Sure.
Where should we start?
I don't know. The same for me. My weeks are identical now. It's just I'm flying with students. That's it.
But you're flying a lot, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm trying to. Yeah, I get about 10 to 15 hours a week at the moment because of wind and stuff. I'm changing my game a little bit on there, but
I do recall you saying last episode it do be bumpy. So
It do be bumpy here in Kansas. It is also, I just saw that as of 8 minutes ago, it is 99 degrees outside.
Oh, no.
Welcome to fall. Yeah, I'm not.
Oh, no, thank you.
Hey, you get the good weather. You don't have to experience this. I do.
That's why I'm saying no thank you and staying right where I'm at.
If for some reason, you want to come down to Missouri?
That's for a fly-in, and it's the middle of October. We'll talk about that in a little bit. So one of the fun and exciting things we did last week was a YouTube live stream with Ryan Dombrowski of Super Aero. What do you think about that, Maddie?
I had a super fun time. Okay, that's it.
I see what you did there. It was a good time, though.
It was super fun.
Yeah, to be able to do our interview of him for our podcast and interact with him and his audience, I thought it was fun.
We'll talk more about that a little later.
Yes, we will. I do also need to make a correction to our last episode. We talked about the six Yankee Niner fly-in that I did, and I thanked Dale and Leslie for the great breakfast they put on. Leslie was certainly part of that, but his name's not Dale. His name is Grant. Grant, I'm so sorry I screwed up your name. I don't know why I had Dale on the brain. I met with a friend named Dale at the airport not long ago, and I think that got into my head as we were recording. So, Grant, I'm sorry. You were awesome. It was fun meeting you. You guys did a great spread. I won't do it again. I mean, mess up your name. I mean, not indulge in your breakfast. I will definitely do that again. But the names, I'll get it right next time. Apologies. I'm
sorry. That is such a huge departure. Like, as far as the names go, I just think that tickled me.
Right?
I mean, I've definitely done that before.
The final bit of excitement from the week that we'll cover before we get into the episode itself. Brian Turner published his last video, which was the... I said that wrong. I made it sound like he's never doing it again.
He's final done. Video for today.
The FISDO shut him down. No more of this nonsense. Brian Turner published his latest video. It was the second part in his series of the Sid Not Flying and features yours truly in an interview talking about the Midwest Flying, the Flying Midwest podcast. I was misidentified as Trevor. I was told that identity theft is not a joke, Jim. And then Brian made appropriate corrections. So part of that is accurate. You're going to have to watch Brian Turner's video to figure out what parts are actually accurate and what not. What is happening?
We're plugging Brian Turner again. That's what's happening.
It's not again. It's more like still. It's a continuation for the past, let's see, April, May, June, July. Yeah, the last
Ever
5 months,
met
I think.
The guy. Yeah.
Yeah, we've been plugging his channel for 5 months now.
Amazing. So, I'm sure.
And oddly enough, I don't think he's seen an uptick in any of his views.
Well, if it helps, the gal I met today, she has heard of the podcast because you posted the KC Pilots group.
I do post in all kinds of Pilots groups. Mm-hmm. So if you hear us, or, oh God, I can't talk.
If you hear us, you are listening to the podcast.
True. If you're here from one of the Facebook groups that I post to on a regular basis, thank you for listening.
So, Jim, I'm riveted. I need to know what happens in the second part of this interview because I didn't get to be here. So the faster we get this done, the faster I get to listen to it. So
that's right, because you do have
what's coming up.
You do have to fast forward through us talking here so that you can listen to the interview.
I know.
So like we teased a little bit earlier, what's coming up is the second part of our interview with Kyle Franklin, where we talk about his actual routines, some of the ones he's put together, what goes into that, as well as a little bit about the future for him and what he finds to be one of the most rewarding aspects of performing.
So because this is a bonus episode and we don't do these very often,
right?
And it's in the middle of our upload times, we do not have news and events this week. Sorry, if you were looking forward to that, come back next week. We will have news and events then. We have a lot of content with Kyle Franklin that we want you to hear. And so we are going to jump right into that.
Correct. But rest assured, I have begun compiling some events. There's some fun ones that I want to try to check out, but I'm not going to promise I'll be there yet. But there's some fun ones coming. We'll talk about them next week.
I can't wait.
But you're going to have to.
Right. Well, darn it. I know I said I had to wait, but I don't want to.
Too bad. I'm not even going to tell Maddie. How about that? Now everyone's on level playing field. Maddie won't know until next week. Fair enough?
Fine.
Sounds fair to me. So without further delay, we'll jump into that second part of the interview with Mr. Kyle Franklin. So you talked a little bit earlier about you like just the entertaining people, going all out and that whole thing. How did you transition that and kind of land on doing comedy type routines?
Well, honestly, the comedy routine was the one, when it comes to the flying, that's the one I actually started doing that with. Granted, my father did a similar act back in the 70s, and he did it off and on through the 80s and early 90s. He really wasn't doing the comedy act all that much after that. But, of course, the comedy act has been a staple at air shows for decades. I mean, it's probably one of the original ones, the clown act of that. And, my father always played the drunk back in the 70s and everything, which to me, the drunk still fits. Oh, yeah. It explains why he's flying so badly. It's not just, oh, he doesn't know how to fly. He's he's inebriated and he doesn't know how to fly. But the drunk always made more sense to me. And I never cared much for the flying farmer thing. Everybody had done. That's kind of been done to death in my book in a lot of ways. So I didn't want to do the flying farmer. And I wanted to continue on with the drunk thing, even though, especially in today's world, being playing a drunk is politically incorrect nowadays. Or it has been. Has been for the last 15 years, but I really don't care. I still like playing the drunk. And it's
a spirit.
Yeah. 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 I like, well, and I get some shows that won't hire me because of the, they like, we don't like the drunk. And I'm like, okay, that's fine. But, you know, I don't have to play the drunk. I can play all the drunk's basically just the bottle.
Yeah.
I can lose the bottle. Then I'm just an obnoxious asshole. You know, then that's
all it's there. Well, it's like the Foster Brooks and Dean Martin skit, you know, where you get the drunk. The
yeah.
Drunk
exactly.
I mean,
yeah, I love Foster Brooks. He was awesome. Oh, I love his stuff. But actually, whenever I first started doing the drunk act, and I was making it my own, you know, my father played the part of some, and I started trying to figure out how to make this my own, and you know, just came up with the wife beater shirt and the shredded jeans. And actually, it was one of my very first show doing that act. I was trying to come up with a hat. It's like, I need some sort of hat. And my initial idea was a red Budweiser hat. You know, it's like, well, hey, I can get red. How much red, more redneck can you get than a Budweiser hat? But
throw a mullet on that.
Hey, yeah, there you go.
I couldn't find one at the time. And I was looking and I needed, the show was that weekend and I needed a hat. And I went by Spencer's Gifts at the mall. And went in there, I was looking at their hats, and they had this beer delivery guy hat. I'm like, that'll work. And I grabbed that. We took it back out to the airport, and it still has some of the cross marks on it. I started the front of the jet engine of the Jet Waco had a screen on the front of them, and it would get kind of grimy with dirt and stuff. And I actually beat the hat against that to get dirt on it, and then tore it up on the ground, making some wear and tear. Got a cigarette, burned some holes in it and different things to make it look worn out. And that's actually still the same hat I'm still using. And I actually just retired the same Chuck Taylor shoes that I started with. I retired those after Oshkosh this year. Nice. Because they were literally, I'd super glued them together quite a few times to make them hold together. I figure it's been, you know, 22 years or so for those shoes. I have probably time to retire those, but anyways, yeah, I got the outfit. And my main concern, because I was 19 or 20 whenever I was doing this, and I had actually never been truly drunk before, and that was my main thing. It's like, man, am I gonna be able to play a drunk? Never been drunk, so I don't know, okay, am I gonna be able to play a drunk? And found out very quickly, my first performance, that, yeah, I can play a drunk real well when I had cops actually trying to chase me down that weren't part of the act. So apparently I played the part a little too well. And that same weekend, I can't remember if it was, I guess it was that weekend as well, as my first opening weekend. And it's amazing the things you come up with that by accident. And one of everybody's favorite part of my comedy routine is the very end, where I come in, shut the engine down, and then ground loop the airplane, and I fall out and the airplane rolls over the top of me. That's everybody's favorite part of the entire routine. And I developed that completely by accident. It was actually kind of a screw up that ended up being one of the best things I've ever done. And typically I would just come up, kick the airplane sideways, fall out of the airplane and stumble away. And that was the way I got out of the airplane. Well, I was coming up and I went and I kicked the airplane sideways. And as I'm coming out, I realize I still have way too much speed on this airplane. And yeah, it's not just going to kick sideways. It's going to full ground loop. And I realized I'm not going to be able to get out, hit the ground and get away from the airplane before that tail hits me. So I just kind of like, screw it. You'll just go with it. And so I fell out, I hit the ground and I ducked and the airplane rolled over the top of me and I got up and stumbled away. And my friends came up to me after, like, dude, that was awesome. Do that again tomorrow. And ever since then, that has been my dismount out of that act, and that has been everybody's favorite part of the act. So it's
so I've seen you a few times, and you're right, that is probably one of the most iconic parts of the act, that you don't see that anywhere, because
no that was all by accident, and it's just turned out to be one of the best things I've ever done.
I mean, if you think about it, everybody's so risk averse, you know, you let your airplane just go, oh, all right.
Well, that's actually what Liz's job, that's one of her jobs, is whenever I fall out of the airplane and, you know, the airplane goes rolling away or something, like I at that point, that's when I wave to the crowd and everything. You catch the airplane so it doesn't roll away into the ditch or anything. Once you stop the airplane, it'll be good. But no, that's my poor airplanes. I mean, all of them, they're working airplanes. Oh, yeah. You know, this is what I do for a living. So they're working airplanes, and I'm very hard on my equipment, as with most airshow performers are. I mean, you know, Skip Stewart, Rob Holland, those guys are hard as hell on their equipment. Skip's mainly hard on engines. Rob's hard on his whole damn airplane. And so am I on that fact, because we run the engines at, you know, power settings they're never supposed to be. I never knew. I don't know. I'd been flying the Waco for quite a few years before I finally learned that, oh, you're only supposed to run at 2,300 RPM for 3 minutes at any given time. It's like, I'm turning 2,400 RPM through the whole damn routine. It's like, oops. But it's what we have to do put on the performance that we do. I mean, Gene Susie did it with the show Cat, and there's several of us out there. And of course, Skip's hard as hell on engines, because he's running those balls to the wall all the time. So, I mean, we're extremely hard on our equipment, and that's one of the reasons, you know, that as soon as the season's over, it's immediate start tearing down the airplane, start doing inspections, check engines, and, you know, the airplane will be down for, you know, the 5 months we have off, if that much. My first show's actually into February next year. Wow. So down on Laredo, Texas. So, you know, and I think our last one as of now is, I think, 1st of October, which works good for me, because I'm a big Halloween guy, and I actually have another side business, which does nothing but cost me money, but I have a lot of fun with it. We go around to all the different haunted attraction and spook houses in the area, and help promote those and help the people out there as much as we can, and go and work as different characters there. And again, comes in with I like dressing up, and I like the cosplay stuff. And,
nice.
You know, over the years in the airshow industry, you know, I've got Ben Wabnowski, which was my comedy guy, Captain Cairo, which was my Pirated Skies one, and then Vakul, who was actually the vampire one. I always got different names. I fly under all different names except my own, seems like.
Yeah, it works. That's the beauty of it.
You actually started answering one of my next questions about the maintenance aspect of it. Is there a lot you have to do between shows to maintain the aircraft so that they continue to be able to perform at that level?
Well, in between the shows, I do oil changes more regularly than most people do. I generally, every other show or so, I'll do an oil change sometimes, depending on what I'm doing, because we don't always fly the airplanes from show to show either. Like Dracula was designed to be trucked. We truck it from show to show pretty much. It only holds an hour worth of fuel on board.
It's a lot of stops.
Yeah, be a lot of stops. You know, basically it has an hour's worth of fuel and that's it. You know, the Cub, on the other hand, the Cub is flown through to every corner of the United States here at some point. But you know, you do have to keep an eye on things, and it does require being very vigilant on things. Heck, last year, I was over in the UK doing some flying over there, and came back for the Battle Creek show, and Liz and I just jumped in the airplane and flew up there. Well, when I got up there, I noticed, I thought I had heard something, but I wasn't 100% sure. And that's the thing about airplanes too. If you listen, they will talk to you and tell you these things. It's very rare to something just, you know, major happen and the airplane crashes or comes apart. It's the little things that'll get you, because it's always the little things. It's like dominoes. The first thing will happen, then the next one, and it creates a domino effect that leads to a big tragedy. But anyways, point being was we got to Battle Creek and I thought I had heard something, and I got to looking around and I saw some heat on the side of one of the metals up there, and popped the thing, and right on the inside where I couldn't see, there was a major crack on the exhaust. And, you know, it was one of those things. I was like, well, do I want to, do I want to have to pull all the exhaust off and try to find someone to weld this up? Cause I don't have my rig, so I don't have my welder or anything. And, anyways, I ended up just going to AutoZone and the parts places and finding a muffler repair kit and some other things and some, hose clamps, and repaired this as best I could with where it's not going to start a fire. It's the crack's not going to spread anymore. This is enough to get me through the show and to get me home. And once I get home, I'll fully fix it. So, you know, yeah, you got to keep an eye out on your maintenance and catch those things ahead of time. And, but yeah, when it comes, when the winter time starts, it's inspect every possible area that you think stress. Of course, with the Super Cub, the landing gear and the wings, those two things are the things I'm the hardest on. And so it's heavy inspection on the wings, making sure there's no cracks in the spars or anything, especially for as much pressure as I put on drag. When I drag those wings, that can get to be a lot of pressure on that airplane, on those wings. And of course, landing gear. I change bolts out on the landing gear every 3 to 4 years, whether they need them or not. The bungees on the, for the shock absorbers, I change those out every other year, whether they need them or not, just to make sure. Just
a lot of preventative, you know, stuff.
Preventative maintenance is the goal. Yeah. The goal is preventative maintenance, but that doesn't always work that way. Sometimes I found if it ain't broke, fix it anyways, because it's still going to break either way.
Sure. Yeah, right. Or it's still going to break because they don't make things like they used to, you know?
No, they don't. And that's actually been one of Dracula's biggest problems. It is just none of the quality and parts and even workmanship in a lot of ways just isn't what it used to be. And man, stuff just does not last as long as it did. I've got a lot of things, a lot of the bearings and the ailerons I'm already having to replace. And the airplane is right at about 200 hours total time. Granted, that's 200 hours of hard air show flying.
Yeah.
But, still, it's just I was very disappointed on how fast, like, some of the bearings. I've had an elevator bearing in Dracula try to kill me twice. Oh, and now I replace that. If I'm flying Dracula heavily, I replace that every year. And it's just, you know, it's like, why won't this bearing last a full season? And it's just cheap parts. You know, always looking at stuff before every flight. Doesn't matter if I'm at a small little show or if I'm at Oshkosh, I do a pre-flight before every flight, go around, push and pull. You know, some people, they get, you know, you'll see, I'll get out on the wingtip and I'll pull down and put a lot of weight, a lot of pressure on the wingtip and lift up and almost lifting the airplane and seeing, because pushing and pulling on, you know, struts, wings, landing gear, again, they'll talk to you if they have a problem. You know, you'll feel something. I had one once where I was lifting up on the strut and I felt a pop. And I'm like, huh, what is that? Pulled it back down, did it again, felt the pop. And ended up getting in there, and it was just, all it was one of the bolts in the strut had gotten a little loose, and it did waller out the hole a little bit, so there was a little more slack in there. So anyways, you know, got that, you know, fixed it good enough to make it through the show. And then when we got home, fixed that, got rid of the slack in there and replaced all that. So it's again, you know,
it's a never ending saga.
It is. And it doesn't matter, just because in the air show world, I have to pay a lot more attention to it and do that a lot more often, because, you know, it is, flying machines fast and low to the ground can be hazardous to your health if you're not careful.
Yeah.
And flat out, people screw up and machines break. Mm-hmm. And you try to mitigate those two the best you can, but flat out, you know, shit happens still. But that's why we're always inspecting the airplanes and looking through them constantly. And at least I am, for sure. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with taking a couple extra minutes if you need it to get your head about you, or to spend a little extra time inspecting the airplane and making sure everything's good to go.
Yeah. What's your favorite routine, I guess, is my biggest question for you.
Oh man, that's
because I know you do the Drunken Pilot very well.
I've been doing that one a long time, and that one is one of my favorite ones, but it's also one of the hardest ones to fly. And it's one out of all the acts I've flown over the years, the comedy act is still the hardest one to fly. Because, you know, as I've said before, it's a lot of work to fly that badly, and especially not to tear anything up, because everything they ever teach you not to do when you're learning to fly is what you do in the routine. So you're already doing things you're not supposed to, and you have to push it to that edge to where you're on the edge of the envelope, but you never want to exceed the envelope. You can fly the edge, but you never want to exceed the envelope. And it's, so it's a matter of just getting there, but doing it safely, and, you know, don't let your ego get involved. Let your ego get too much in there. And then of course, never show off, you know, and if you do show off, know that that's when it's going to bite you.
Yeah.
So always keep that in mind, you know, everybody's, cause that's, you know, all those hold my beer type things. That's normally when that.
Yeah. But, what you mentioned there a second ago, as we were talking about having you come on, that's what we said with between the three of us is, man, it has got to be a lot of work to fly that bad. Like, it's going to take a lot of skill. And then ended up backing that up. We just, at least I don't know if you've seen it yet, Trevor, but I just saw Eric Johnson's video from Oshkosh. I'm like, good grief. Like, well, not only is it look like just a ton of work and just a ton of, you know, manipulation of the controls, power on, power off, and not just little adjustments. But it looks like you're having a blast too at the same time, you know?
It's a lot of fun to fly that act, but that act is not one that I can just kind of a lot of times just jump in and go and do. It's not the same. I have to get in the clothes, get in the character. It's very much like acting, is I have to get into character and think, okay, this is comedy act. So all the things, you know, you normally don't do, you're supposed to do now. And it's just, Once I take off running, and honestly, the setup is the scariest part for me, because the setup, I have so many different moving parts and people involved in the setup. It doesn't always go as much as well as I had hoped on when it comes to the setup between announcer and where the airplane ends up and all the different things there. I'm a perfectionist in the way I want to do this. And so I'm trying to make sure I get everything the way I want it. But once I'm in the airplane, I'm golden. And from that point, you know, putting the seatbelt on is one of the hardest things in that act. But the whole act in general is a hard act. And I don't realize how exhausting it is until the very end, when I finally fall out and I wave. And then it all kind of catches up with me. And I realize how winded I am and exhausted I am on there. Because it is a lot of just, you know, cross-controlling. You know, one of the ones I watched the same video. I was curious how all that turned out. And, you know, it's like my screaming pass where I'm waving out the window and screaming. And I generally got another bottle I'll drop, and Liz is trying to get it. And when I'm doing that, you know, I'm screaming and waving and watching where I am with the crowd. But on the same point, I need a little bit of power, and I don't want too much power, because I'm trying to keep the airplane reasonably, you know, a little bit of this, a little up and down, to where it still looks a little chaotic. It's not straight, but I'm also intentionally trying to lose some altitude with it. But you don't want to lose too much. You don't want too much forward stick. So it's a bunch of wave, throttle, wave, stick, wave, you know, and just constantly hitting this stuff as I just kind of see where the airplane's going, and then just let it sink all the way to the ground, and then
drag your wing tip.
Yeah, then go from there. Right. So, but no, the comedy act is definitely one of my favorites. And then prior to that, I would say, honestly, flying the Waco mystery ship back in the day, doing my solo routine in that was a lot of fun for me. I really enjoyed flying that airplane. And I hope one of these years here soon, we're going to get that airplane back together. You know, it's like anything, it takes time and money, and I can never have enough of each.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the Waco's, it's coming there. It's got new wings for it. They're built, ready, almost ready to go. They still need to be covered and painted. But anyways, the wings are built, varnished, airframe, most of the stuff on it's been repaired. We're getting there. We're getting there. I haven't done anything on it in the past couple of years because I haven't had the money to throw at it. But hopefully we'll get it back up and running here soon. And because that the Waco Mystery Ship was an amazing airplane to fly, and it was a very forgiving airplane, but you know, made you work for it in a lot of ways too. And that was definitely probably one of the funnest acts I had flying there. Granted, you know, flowing onto that Pirated Skies was. That one I really enjoyed performing. I knew that was going to be I knew from the start that was going to be a pretty good act and go on. It ended up becoming bigger than what I expected. You know, that was primarily because of Amanda. When she took over the wing walking bit, she brought everything to a whole new level. And, I'd have to say, you know, the comedy act and flying the Waco were my two favorites. Don't get me wrong, Dracula is a lot of fun, but, you know, I still... The Mystery Ship was a lot more fun of an airplane to fly in some ways.
How much goes into developing these different routines? I imagine it's not just a quick, easy process. So, you know what? I'm going to try this. It's got to be a lot of work.
Yeah, it all depends. You know, depends on you know how elaborate I want to take it. Because I've always said I don't do anything half-assed. If I decide I'm going to do this, I'm all in. And the comedy act was definitely probably the simplest one I've ever done. Definitely has the cheapest costume I've ever had done up. I mean, wife beater, pair of jeans, and that's pretty much it. Most good acts, and you know, we saw this even with Stefan whenever he debuted the Red Baron act, is it takes a better part. You know, you have your basic concept and you think you've got everything lined out. And then once you get out on the air show circuit and start doing it, you realize, okay, some of the stuff works, some of it doesn't. And so you start having to readjust and change things and manipulate things. And hopefully by the end of that first season, you'll have everything figured out and get it together. But it is a process and depends, again, on what level you're wanting to take it. I mean, Pirated Skies, you know, like, with Pirated Skies, the sword pass. So I was wanting to do that sword duo there. That took me a little while to figure out exactly, okay, how do I put these wooden swords in the cockpit and have them secure enough that they stay through aerobatic maneuvers, but also easy enough to just be able to pull them off to where we can do these things and put them back in very simply. And, you know, it ended up not being that elaborate of a thing. I stumbled across a broom holder for a home at Home Depot. I found a broom holder and it ended up working perfect to hold those swords in place. Huh. Of course, I always go extreme on the right music, coming up with music like this new act that that I'm wanting to do with the Viking. I've got the music already laid out. The music's already actually done. We picked all the songs we wanted. I've got it pretty much all edited out. Not that that won't change once we get going, but that and of course coming up with different lights and different ideas. And, well, we're talking with Kit Fox Aircraft too about bringing. You know, we're planning on building another Speedster, hopefully, and have that out. And I've got some ideas to go with that. So yeah, I know they can get pretty involved. The vampire and the pirate were the two that were the most involved. I would say. The Dracula's debut was probably the most involved I've ever done. Not a whole lot of pictures out there of it, but Dracula debuted in 2012 at the International Council of Air Shows convention out in Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. We trucked the airplane out there. I bought about 10 booths to display the airplane. And I basically built a castle cemetery in the exhibit hall for Dracula. It had, you know, huge towers I had borrowed from a friend and then had banners all up and animatronic vampires and, you know, animatronic bat that would jump out at you and fog machines, speakers. I mean, it was just it's its own little spook house there with Dracula as the centerpiece. Nice. And I have to dig out some of those pictures, but you know, that I went all out on the debut for it and different ideas. And that was one of those things though, too, is, you know, I knew Pirated Skies in the beginning, I knew was going to go well, and it did well. I had a lot of negative feedback in the beginning from, well, even Amanda and Matt Youngkin and everything. They didn't care. Nobody liked my pirate act. No one liked the idea of the pirate. but then it started going over really well and their attitudes changed a little bit towards it. But I always knew the pirate thing was going to be golden. I knew that was going to be my gold. And then we were already working on Dracula. I was like, Dracula will go good, but it's going to be the silver. It's not going to do as well as the pirate did. And yeah, I was pretty much right. Not everybody, all my fans, they understood the vampire thing and Dracula and where I was going. And of course, at the time you had True Blood and all the Twilight series and all that stuff was out.
Sure. So,
yeah, the fans got it. Unfortunately, the people that hired me didn't get it, especially after the loss of Amanda, which I think a lot of them didn't realize that Amanda was a huge influence on the vampire thing. She actually, you know, like I said, she didn't like the pirate. She was really looking forward to the vampire. That's what, and she had a big hand in the design of that airplane, paint scheme, music, and everything, and the story. And I toned all of that back a lot after she passed. And even at that, got a lot of show promoters that just didn't understand it. They didn't get it. They didn't understand. Didn't understand the vampire thing. Didn't understand where I was going with it. And so, you know, Dracula still went well, especially with the fans. They really liked it. But, you know, I ended up changing a lot after the fact. You know, it did have a whole story that went to it. I ended up kind of doing away with the story and anyways, changed a lot of that and went with what worked and what people liked. So, you know, it's like with any job, there's a lot of trial and error, but there is a lot that goes into, you know, my act and the ones where you really get a lot of the showmanship stuff involved and theatrics and things like that. You have, again, so many working and moving parts in there and you got to figure out what works and what doesn't. And it can take a while to figure all that stuff out. Well, another long ass answer.
I'm thoroughly entertained. So I want to ask a quick follow-up question on just the routine parts. How long does that take though? Do you think is this months, years to put these acts together? Or?
Depends on how elaborate. Let me use this one, for example, the Kit Fox, with the Kit Fox Speedster that I flew at Oshkosh. Was that 17 and 18? Flew that at Oshkosh, did a few other shows around the country with it, and also flew Sun and Fun with it. But that was in that airplane. It was the first Speedster since the Model 4 that my father had flown that Speedster. I think they stopped building the Speedsters in the early 2000s. And so this was the first of the new S7 Speedster. And I didn't know how I was going to fly. Never flown a Kit Fox before. And wasn't sure how I was going to fly. Wasn't sure what was all going to be involved with it. So I told him, you know, as they were building it, I told him, like, well, get it to me a month. We were going to debut it at Oshkosh. And I'm like, well, get it to me a month before Oshkosh. That'll give me time to, you know, figure the airplane out, put together a routine. I got to get paperwork done so I'm legal to fly in it. You know, I got all these things I've got to do and I want to have time to really figure out the airplane and put on a good routine with it. Well, as things go, that didn't happen. They had their own issues they ran into and they ended up getting me the airplane a week before Oshkosh.
Uh-oh.
So you know, I went from wanting a month to having a week and wow. I knew this was coming. So I'd already lined all the paperwork issues with the FAA and my ACE and everything. I'd gotten all that dialed in, but it was always, I hope this airplane flies well and I'm able to figure something out fairly quick with it. And luckily the airplane is a great flying airplane, was a lot of fun. And I pieced together, you know, went from flying it, learning how to fly it and all its ins and outs to putting a routine together in about 3 days. So that, and then coming up with a little bit of music for it for Oshkosh. You know, again, I did all of that in a week. And actually a little less than a week because they had to fly to get the airplane up to Oshkosh. So, but you know, you can put these things together pretty quick. But that was just a basic aerobatic routine. You know, no real theatrics or anything with it. It was just a routine. But also just figuring out that airplane, and that's one of the reasons. Yeah, if you watch the Kit Fox videos and everything, I'm sitting in the right seat instead of the left seat. Well, primarily because had I had the airplane for the full month in advance, I probably would have been flying for the lefty, because then that's, but that's flying with my left hand and right hand on the throttle if I'm in the left seat. Yep. with the control stick. And I didn't have the time to, I've never flown aerobatics with my left hand. I've flown aerobatics with yokes, you know, left hand, right hand, that's not a big deal. But a control stick left-handed, you know, when a, flying from with left-handed there, I've never done that before. And I'm like, I don't have time to figure out how to fly with my left hand doing aerobatics and put the routine together. So forget it. I'm just going to stay in the right seat. So I stayed in the right seat. So I had my normal right hand for flying and left hand on throttle. I mean, that, and that's one of the main reasons. I just didn't have the time. But I talked with other people. Some people, they just flat out don't like flying from the left seat and those things. And the and those in general, much less also having to fly left-handed. They prefer just to stay in the right. But I got a little flack for that. Like, why isn't he in the left seat? Like, because I didn't have time to figure out how to do aerobatics with my left hand.
I don't know that I would have necessarily thought about that. I mean, just at face value, as you look at it, I could see asking the same question.
Yeah. No, that, but that was one of the main reasons, is it's like, I don't have time to figure out how to do this with my left hand. I'm going to go with the right. Because, you know, the panel, the glass panel and everything they had on the left, it was on the left side, so it was kind of hard to see. There wasn't really anything in front of me in the right seat. There wasn't any instruments there, so I was constantly kind of have to glance over there. But which is fine, because in a routine, I'm normally not paying attention to any of that stuff anyways. That's one reason I'm a big fan of steam gauges. And like, even Dracula, even though it was a new airplane, it has all steam gauges in it. No, there's no glass or anything, because in that routine, I don't need to be looking down, trying to find numbers or look at different things. I've got all the gauges in there set to where, as long as the needle is vertical, we're good to go. So if I'm on the top of a loop coming over the top, I can look down and scan the panel, and as long as all the needles are vertical, we're good to go.
Nice.
But if I look down and one needle's one way or the other, then I know I've got a problem. And I like old school needles. I even had the guys in the Kit Fox, because they had that instrument, that glass panel was all set up with numbers all over the place and everything. Like, does this have a steam gauge setting? He's like, actually it does. And he got in there and he put it, and up on the screen, all these little round gauges popped up, you know, altimeter, airspeed, G meter, all these things. I'm like, perfect. Leave that there. But yeah, that was, you know, that was one that we pieced together really quick. Pirated Skies, you know, that took what we had finally came up with in the end. It took a little over a year. Dracula was along the same lines. It took about a year for me to figure out, here's the way I wanted to go. Okay. People like this. They don't like this. Let's rearrange this and make this work better. You know, what part of my flying do they like? What part do they don't? And, you know, it's always getting criticism from friends and other fellow performers and everything as well, because, you know, I got no problem, you know, with all of us. If you're a pilot, you have an ego anyways, but yeah. I always try to keep my ego in check as much as I can, because, sure, you know, I want to hear back from people. If, like, you know, if I get a show that's like, oh, we won't hire Franklin, it's like, well, tell me why. You know, I need to know why. I mean, I'm not going to be offended. I'm not going to be this. Like, you got your reasons. That's fine. But I need to know, was it something I did or something, so I can be a better person. It's the same way with my routines. If people are like, okay, what did you like? What bored you? Give me your input. Good, bad, ugly, all of it. Give me your input. Because if the routine sucks, or you're like, oh yeah, that was boring, but I landed, you're like, oh man, that's great. It's like, well, if it's not great, don't tell me it's great.
Yeah. Yeah. That's your livelihood. It's your reputation. You got to be able to, yeah, you got to be able to build on that and be able to take harsh criticism.
Yeah, exactly. And I have no problem with that. You know, some people, and you know, I had another performer friend, he's like, man, I give you all this advice and you never take any of it. It's like, that doesn't mean I don't want to hear it. I mean, you can tell me, give me your advice. Give me your two cents. I might agree with you. I might not. I might take part of what you say, but in the end, it's my act, and it's, you know, me piecing this together doesn't mean I'm going to agree with you. And if it's my choice to, nah, I don't like that idea, I'm going to do my own thing, that's on me. Mm-hmm. So, but no, I mean, that's the main thing, is always be open. in anything you're doing in life, you know, be open to criticism. And yeah, you're going to get those that what the hell do they know? They don't know what they're talking about, and you can go your own way. But always, you know, always just keep in mind, you know, to take people's, you know, advice, or if they got ideas or suggestions, take it for what it's worth. You might use it, you might not, but it never hurts to hear other people out and get their two cents on, doesn't matter what you're doing. I know even back in the Masters of Disaster days with my dad and all those, most of the opening maneuvers and the opening sequence on that, a lot of that came from spectators, from fans that were like, hey, what'd be cool is, you know, if two of you guys circling here and that jet walk would just blast up right in the between. It's like, that's a cool idea. Well, let's try that next time. And that ended up being the opening we used. And that came from a spectator. So, you know, it's always good to get, you know, get other input from different people and different visions on, you know, different ideas on the way things would go. And you know, always do end up with something probably good if you get a lot of input from different people.
Yeah. What is the most rewarding part of your career thus far? What's been the most rewarding, eye-opening, humbling?
A lot of questions.
Yeah, that's a lot of different things there.
You could answer it 15 different ways. Philosophically, you could answer it.
Yeah, nope, well, it's... answer it, I'll bounce around a little bit here on this then. let's see. For me, the most rewarding part is the entertaining. As long as people are still willing to come out and watch me fly, no matter what I'm doing, and as long as they're enjoying doing it, I'll keep doing it because God knows I don't do it for the money. But it's not a whole lot of money in this business. But, you know, the entertaining is the most rewarding part to me. I love to entertain. And when I land and people say, dude, that's just the craziest thing I've ever seen, or how in the world did you do this? Or that, when you can tell people are enjoying it, or, you know, I get emails every now and then and different things from people that, hey, I saw you fly, you know, when I was a kid, and, you know, because of you, I started flying, you know, got my pilot's license and everything. It's, you don't realize fully as an air show performer how much of an inspiration and impact you can have on people's lives, which, you know, it's funny I say that, though, when I look back at all the things that had an influence on me from different movies and different people and different things, it's like, I can see how that works, but it's just funny when you're doing it yourself, it feels kind of, it just feels a little strange thinking that, like, I'm the one that inspired this person to become an airline pilot or to get their pilot's license. Those things, the entertainment and, you know, the inspiring people to go after their dreams or different things, that is the most rewarding part for me. That being said, you know, to me, the most fulfilling and my crowning achievement so far in this business was Pirated Skies. The Pirated Skies wing walking routine, and that was my crowning achievement, especially since I had so much kind of negativity in the beginning with the idea about, you know, even, you know, Amanda didn't like the idea much. Nobody liked the pirate until the pirate came out, and then everybody really liked it. And so I consider Pirated Skies was my crowning achievement. You know, of course, love doing all my other acts, but Pirated Skies was my crowning achievement there.
So typically we end the episode with asking for your unpopular opinion on aviation. I think maybe you covered it, though, in your pet peeves pretty well.
Yeah, so I think we already got that.
Are you familiar with Brian Turner? He's a YouTuber. He does this channel called Just Plain Silly.
I don't think I've seen that one. I'm not a huge tech guy, so I'm not online. Sure.
We brought him on for an episode, and he does this satirical YouTube channel, basically. So he's making fun of everything. He's been reported to the FISDO a couple times for things he's said because people take him too seriously.
I know that's great, because through my career, I've had the FAA and ICAST make new rules because of me. And I consider that.
No, don't. Trevor Jacob, don't jump out of an airplane.
Yeah.
Because I actually have that in my bio stuff that, you know, I consider that a crowning achievement that the FAA issued new rules because of things I did. That was a crowning achievement.
This is the Kyle Franklin rule.
Yeah.
We started some bickering between, not really bickering, I guess, but some
spirited debate.
Spirited debate about Brian came on and said, I refuse to believe that being a tailwheel pilot makes you a better pilot. Because I can't think that something you only use on the ground makes you a better pilot. You might be able to taxi the fuel pumps better than me, but I don't know how that reflects to being in the air. We brought this other guy in who's just avid tailwheel pilot who starts listing out all these reasons why, and Brian eventually conceded, but that's
good because he was wrong.
Yeah, that's been one of our more fun unpopular opinions, to not only have him say that, but then for us to challenge him in a future episode with another guest come in to tell him he's wrong.
No, it's hands down, having the tailwheel endorsement and having tailwheel instruction makes you a million times better pilot. It just helps with the hand and eye coordination and hand and foot. And I mean, we knew a person that they got their pilot's license and they still didn't know how to use rudders because their pilots, their instructor at the time just told them, like, don't worry about those. Those aren't that important. And, you know, granted, they're flying only nose wheel. So whenever she went to tailwheel, had the rude awakening.
Oh, I'm sure.
Oh, wait, you got to use your feet. Another pet peeve type thing is pilots that don't understand the concept of just because you push your airplane out of the hangar, turn it one way or the other. Don't push it out of the hangar and then start up and blast everything in the hangar. I see air show pilots are actually some of the worst out there to do that. And I've known that since I was like 3 years old. One of the stories my dad always told is, I guess Danielle Aguam and Montaigne Mullane of the French Connection, you know, they had been around a long time. I was about 3 years old, and apparently they did that at a show where they pulled their airplanes right out in front of the hangar, fired up and blasted everything in the hangar and taxied off. And my dad said something, God, I hate it when people do that. They shouldn't do that, blah, blah, blah. Well, as a three-year-old, you know, oh, my dad's right. When they came back down and landed, this three-year-old went out there, you shouldn't start your airplanes and blast the hangar. And I think from that day forward, Montaigne never liked me. No, I don't think Montaigne. Yeah, I knew her for the next 20 years, and I don't think she ever liked me after that.
It all goes back to something you said when you were three.
You know, Danielle was awesome. He was fun to hang out with. Montaigne, though, she just liked to argue. It's like, I like to bitch about stuff. She just liked to argue. You could tell her the sky's blue, and she would sit there and argue with you why it's not blue. I mean, yeah, the French Connection team, they were a hoot to hang out with back in the day.
Nice. Well, we certainly appreciate your time tonight and all your stories. And maybe we can do this again sometime.
I enjoyed the conversation, enjoyed talking about it. Yeah, I appreciate you guys having me on. And definitely do this again. I got lots, you know, if need some other filler stuff, want to talk about other things, by all means, hit me up. I got tons of stories.
Awesome. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. And again, you guys want to do this again? Yeah, I'm happy to help. So just let me know.
Awesome. I think we
can definitely do that. But appreciate your time tonight.
Yeah, man. My pleasure. You guys have a good evening.
Yeah, you too. Take care, guys. Take care. See ya.
Thank you.
That dude was awesome.
We didn't have to talk a whole lot.
No, he just kept giving us good content. He was a blast, though.
Oh, yeah.
He's an entertainer, and he absolutely entertained me tonight. So,
yeah, I mean, and he's just very down to earth. He's not cocky, which
I was just gonna say that.
I like him even more.
It's too bad she couldn't be on. I think she would have really enjoyed him.
Oh yeah, I think so.
So Jim, what did I miss?
You missed a great interview with Kyle Franklin. You are gonna have to go back and listen to the episode to hear that. If you've got FOMO and your fear of missing out on what that other interview was, don't worry. You didn't miss a ton of like context that you would have missed for this episode. You can still go right back and listen to the previous episode for part one of that interview with Kyle. So once again, just want to thank Kyle Franklin for being a part of the podcast, and we look forward to talking to him again in the future. So we teased it at the beginning of the episode, but Maddie, what do we got coming up on our next episode?
Next episode, I'm really excited about. We had an absolute blast last week on Super Aero Live, which is a live stream that happens every week on Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m., put on by a gentleman named Ryan Dombrowski. I had so much fun. We talked for way longer than we anticipated but it was super fun. We got to get to know him about how he started Super Aero, what he loves to do in aviation, kind of where he's at with things. It was really fun. We totally dunked on Brian half the time.
Yeah, You know, as much as we build him up, though, there needs to be some equality in building him up and breaking him down.
I don't know. I think he's funny. I've been a fangirl for ages. I'm going to continue with the let's just talk about Brian Turner all the time. He's just like, he's been a running joke for 5 months. And I still think it's funny. It's great. It works. But yeah, we had really a lot of fun on the live stream the other night. And I really can't wait to get that episode pushed out to you guys.
So look forward to that when we publish that next week. If you want to reach out to us, have any episode ideas for the future, or just want to leave us a comment, you can reach out to us on any of our social media sites or reach out at our email, which is flyingmidwestpodcast@gmail.com. If you haven't picked up your Flying Midwest Podcast merch yet, you can certainly do that as well. That's on our website, flyingmidwest.com/merch. Those links will be in the show notes.
Well, guys, this has been fun. And thank you for joining us on this episode of the Flying Midwest Podcast. Until next time.
See ya.
See ya.
Celestia 536, contact Minneapolis Center 132.35 today.
Thanks so much for joining us on the Flying Midwest Podcast. Until next time, podcast service terminated, Squawk VFR, frequency change approved. Good day.